You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. We go where you go. The world's greatest radio. You're in touch with faith and family. Our mission is to share uplifting information that supports families in living more abundant lives. And I'm Reverend Dr. Carolyn Pettigrew, and this is radio the way it should be heard.
This is Reverend Dr. Carolyn L. Pettigrew here to bring you information and a guest to help us live life and live it more abundantly. Let's begin with a prayer, singing praises to the Lord. Sing praises to the Lord. Sing praises. Psalm 47:6. God of the winds and waters, of fire and all, Lord of the solitary moon, the Creator, the ancestor of all, adoration unto Thee, 1,000 adorations, and again unto Thee, adoration. Amen. Well, today's guest is such a one who brings all this wonderful information about living more abundantly. Tim Anderson, OSU College of Agriculture certified Ohio Master Urban Farmer, is with us today. And I have a reading that I think is important to kind of set the stage. Non-gardening observers sometimes speak of gardening as a hobby or pastime, as though it might be a casually taken up or dropped as playing video games or Texas line dancing. Nothing could be further from the truth. Des Kennedy of Green Prints, the Weeders Digest. And here to demonstrate the truth of this quote is OSU certified master urban farmer Tim Anderson. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Pettigrew, for the invitation.
Well, I just love talking to you, and we've had other conversations on the air at times, and you have told us about your journey, where you were at that time into gardening, and I'm a gardener myself, and so I just love, mine is pollinating gardening, but yours is for food, and I just love the continuation of your story. I wanted to say again, welcome to the Faith and Family family, and I just wanted you to tell us several things, and you can just talk. Tell us about your title, what it means, why did you pursue it, just your journey. You know, what is the meaning and purpose about it, and what does it mean to be certified? Just tell us all about your journey.
Okay, I appreciate that. Well, I've been a backyard gardener for many years. More than 15 years, in fact. And I believe genetically, my grandparents who were gardeners, I got the gardening bug, I believe, from them and didn't know it until about 15 years ago when I started to think about growing food and what that meant to grow food, the independence of growing food. And what that means in terms of our connecting and growing food with our own health and wellness. And I use that to really understand the journey, my own health challenges, and how to positively impact my health through growing my own food.
Mm-hmm.
And so through the years, I began to understand, you know, the whole thing about being a cultivator, being someone that, you know, lays the seed, does the work to produce food. And within the last couple of years, you know, I have been sharing that information and knowledge with other growers, people who said that they couldn't grow anything. And what I kind of specialize in, Dr. Pettigrew, is the is adapting small spaces into growing vegetables and growing fruit.
Yes.
So one of the things that when the opportunity presented itself to attend the Urban Master Farming Program at OSU College of Agriculture this past year, I wasn't so focused on how to grow food, but really the business side of urban farming. And let's make a brief distinction between farming and urban farming. Typically in farming, we see large tracts of land and we see a concentration of both livestock as well as vegetation. In urban farming, we see a smaller tract of land, usually less than an acre, and we see a diversity of vegetation and not so much livestock. You might see chickens or something of that nature, but for the most part, we're talking about a small plot of land and a real diverse type of vegetation. So the program that I attended at OSU was a 12-week program that started back in January. And it went on for roughly 3 hours for those 12 weeks on a Thursday evening. And we had both an instructor as well as speakers who were involved in farming and those who were also involved in urban farming. And we learned, a lot of things from the local laws that apply to farming. And pollination. We learned about rotation of crops, just a whole thing. I think most of us had a strong orientation as growers, and so there wasn't too much that was new except for the business of urban farming. And so that was one of the reasons why I took the program, so that I could get a better understanding of the business of urban farming and what that means to our community, mm-hmm. and how we take this knowledge and adapt it to small pieces of land from a standpoint of sustainability, profitability, making our community healthier as a result of this. So I kind of look at it that I became more of a resource to our community with this knowledge. I'm not necessarily planning at this moment to develop a tract of land of an acre or less. One never knows. But I think that what this helps is just to, we have conduits in our community. You're one of them. I'm one of them around this whole thing of nature and vegetation. And I'm just another conduit that am here to help those who want to know more about growing food.
You know, that is so important that you say that, a resource, a conduit. It is so important. It's always been important when our grandparents were gardening, or my parents were gardening, and everything, other people were growing their food. I used to have a friend. She's since moved away. But she used to say, when we were raising our small children, one of the things that she was frustrated about is that we weren't encouraged to grow our own food, to fish for sustenance, to be independent when it came to a food source, as, you know, people in the city or whatever. And she tried to do as much of that as she could for her family. And I think so much is coming out, research is coming out about being in nature. Our son used to say, when I'm in nature, I feel close to God. And there's something to that. Now there's studies about that, the calming nature, the stress. How they've been talking about forest bathing, but working in soil, in your garden, yeah. whether you're growing foods as you are, or doing pollinator gardening as we are doing. And our yard is certified for wildlife and butterflies, and he started that at 10. So grew up to be a biologist, but and other things, but they're now giving more credence to the importance of the nurturing of our minds, bodies, our spirit, and bodies being sustenance as well as, you know, helping to help our pollinators, our butterflies, our bees, our hummingbirds, helping them to live, because when they're reduced, our food source is reduced. And that impacts animals and humans. So I love that phrase of conduit. I like also your emphasis on the business side of urban farming and the issue that you can start with a small plot. You can start with pots on your balcony or patio. Now, I wanted to ask you, when you talk about the business side of urban gardening, and then you talked about learning about our local laws, what kinds of help? Talk to us about that. What did you learn that you're now able to pass along to the rest of us and help all of us in terms of our farming and gardening?
Well, you know, I think that when it comes to the laws associated with, and I am absolutely no expert on the laws of agriculture and urban and city regulations, but I think one of the things that we have to understand is that as we do more things into our environment, as we change our environment, plots of land into agricultural land, that there are regulations that apply to that we have to be mindful of. And I'll give you an example of one of the things I'm talking about is the fact of, you know, we have land. Not all land is good land to farm and so, or to grow food on. And so you want to make sure that you understand the history of the lot, the plot of land, whether or not it had some contaminants in the soil that will be dangerous to grow food in. Because in a lot of urban settings, we don't know the history of the land, and we don't know whether or not that land is contaminated or not. So if the land is, if you don't know the history of the land, OSU College of Agriculture will do a soil study to let you know what composition of the dirt is. And when you go around to a lot that you're thinking about growing, you wanna choose different areas of the lot to get a variety of samples first, and then have those samples taken over to OSU College for Agriculture, and they'll test that and determine the composition makeup of that soil. And that's very important, especially if you don't know the history of that soil. And then you want to make sure that locally, that local laws, both in the county as well as the city, are being followed in terms of, you know, just in terms of just general what you can do, what you can't grow. There aren't so much inhibition or prohibitions against growing food on lots and lands, but there are different types of regulations that we have to be familiar with. And one of the things I think that's important is to be conservatory. When you start farming or when you start gardening, what you have to be guarded about the resources that we use, such as water, such as fertilization, and those kind of things. So you have to be careful and mindful of those kind of things. I think that in general, I agree completely with you, Dr. Pettigrew, about, you know, how we are, you know, we're kind of programmed, if you will. Our DNA is programmed to be cultivators. And so but in today's world, as technology begins to take more and more over, you know, now we've got artificial intelligence, which is now not only on the radar, but all over the place now. And so we're moving away from this this natural state of how do we coexist with our environment. And I think that one of the ways that is absolutely a more natural approach to our coexistence to nature is to make sure that we apply nature's principle to our everyday living. How else can you do that but through gardening, either through what you do or what I do? We are tapping into that system that connects us to who we are. I'll give you an example, and I tell this story a lot this year because of the nature of Canadian wildfires and how that affects our environment. And so a lot of folks have, you know, contacted me and said, Tim, you know, my vegetables aren't growing the way that I was hoping this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, doing the things that they were supposed to be doing. But I wrote about this on social media to explain the impact of global warming, and in particularly the impact of the Canadian wildfires and how that impacts us. And I look at vegetation, whether you grow it for food or you grow it as a sanctuary, as the canary in the coal mine, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
And when it will be our vegetation on this planet will be the first thing that we notice that the earth is out of kilter when we see things going on. So we had this smoke that was coming down from the Canadian wildfires, and it was blocking the sun. And what happened, and I always tell folks, look at the sun like a giant recharge battery.
Okay.
All right. Look at the sun produces energy, and that energy in terms of vegetation on the planet is used for plants to absorb nutrients from the ground, right?
Because the
sun doesn't provide nutrients. It just energizes vegetation
that
it can begin to pull nutrients from the ground.
Yes.
Well, when the sun is interfered with smoke, what happens? Our plants are saying, hey, listen, it's not enough energy for me to start pulling nutrients from the ground so that I can start growing and producing fruit and vegetables or flowers or whatever.
Or nectar and pollinators, yes.
Yeah, so that blockage that has, people have complained this year that their plants didn't do as well.
And took so long to bloom. That's what I found. That a number of my plants, I started thinking, what in the world is going on? I'm watering, and you're speaking to organic, using organic things, non-chemical things to make our ecosystem more healthy. And I was doing everything and reading up on the plants, and there were a couple of plants that I was reading up. Okay, it should be blooming. It's July, you know. Now the blue lobelia, which is a wonderful plant for hummingbirds. Our hummingbirds are now coming through because they're migrating, and they are pollinators. They help to pollinate so that we can have food for humans and animals, so that the two of us, we kind of work together, you know, people who do what we do. But it's finally having the blue bell-shaped flowers that the hummingbird can go to and get a little nectar from. How much they're getting, I don't know. But I noticed that, too, when I read articles on heat and how and the weather, how plants were stressed. And, you know, when I did, and I want to get to that in a minute, how I can get your resource where they can find this article, and then I want to tell them about a YouTube one for me. But one of the first things that I say in establishing the Ministry of Pollinator Garden, make sure you have plenty of sun. Put it in a sunny place because that's where your host plants and your nectar plants will thrive. And that's really another way of saying, in fact, you've expanded on it beautifully, that if we don't have the sun for energy, the plants can't grow, make nutrients for the nectar or the tomatoes or whatever our outcome is for the pollinators or for people to eat. I think that's a wonderful, important point there. Did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I just want to add that, you know, our environment is in a constant state of flux. And what happens is as the sun's energy becomes less, becomes greater from the lack of smoke from the Canadian wildfires or pollutants or whatever, our plants then adapt to coming back to their normal production. So I had shared with a number of growers that once the pollutants were removed from our atmosphere, that our plants will rebound to that. But the issue was is that the Canadian wildfires had a great deal added a great deal of pollutants into the atmosphere, which blocked a lot of the energy from the sun for that photosynthesis to occur, so that those plants could take nutrients out of the soil. Now, one of the things that I also said that was important while these plants were in vegetations were being stressed is that we needed to do a great deal more pruning. We needed to remove and even make the plants a little smaller so that they could pull the energy, pull the nutrients from the soil. And so by pruning back the plant and removing dead or diseased leaves or whatever, but general pruning will help that plant to survive what was going on. And then in addition, to look at organic fertilization to help put back into the soil and do the whole thing of water. So there were three things that we needed to focus on during this high level of pollutants from the Canadian wildfire, and that was heavy pruning, prune down the plant, be fertilized, and then see water consistently. So those three things help the plant to kind of be less stressed through this process. So there were things that we were able to do, but we didn't know what to do. And so I just think that if we, as the environment continues to change and we see these wildfires that pollute pollutants in our environment that block the sun's energy, the big battery, as I call it, the sun's the big battery. Our plants can adapt, but we have to read the signals. They're going to be the first, you know, you and I need the sun's energy. We feel better we feel better when you and I are in the sun. Now, you talked earlier how being in the soil is, you know, it's helpful to our body. And that's because being in soil, there are certain nutrients in the soil that help release endorphins in our body that make us have a better sense of well-being.
Wonderful.
Well, in the same with the sun. So when, you know, in the wintertime, when we don't have a lot of sunlight, we have you know, our energy levels low, and you know, some people are prone to emotional or social distress because of the lack of the sun's energy. Well, that can happen even in the spring and the summer if we don't have, you know, that bright sunlight shining down on us. And I think that we have to be mindful as stewards of the environment. We're not great stewards of the environment, Dr.
No, Spencer. We're not. No, we're not.
But as stewards of the environment, we have to understand that we are all connected.
Yes, we are.
In this planet. And we have to, we cannot make that a separateness in terms of how we live our lives. We have to live our lives really, with no pun intended, in a very organic way, a way that is sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what our parents and our grandparents did. They understood the nature of growing food and their well-being, right? They completely understood that connection. And that is something that is really programmed in our DNA. Scientists have said that DNA, which, you know, contains our genes and makes our hair the color that we have and so forth, that 30% of our DNA is influenced by the environment.
That's right.
30%. So what does that say? So if our environment is not healthy, right, then we as humans can't get healthy, right?
That's right. That's right.
And so if our environment is healthy, if it's not being stressed out, then that positively impacts our own health from
a DNA
perspective.
That's right.
Go ahead, sir.
And the thing I wanted to add to that is from my, you know, our being, we're talking, at you and I, as what they call now, citizen scientists. And so we're learning so much through research and classes and experience and all. But the thing that I want to say to my listeners is that when you're talking about the environment, I know it's overwhelming every day to hear all the things that are happening in the earth because we haven't been good stewards of our environment. But as Tim is doing, as I'm doing, others are doing, just beginning to do either your vegetable gardening and farming, or as I am doing pollinator gardening for birds, bees, and butterflies, using organic, non-chemical fertilizers and, you know, ways to treat our plants for bugs and whatever, they're non-chemical. The kinds of fertilizers we use, being organic in our lawn care, whatever, that begins to change the environment or the ecosystem in our yards, in Tim's yards. And if other people are doing it other places, then we get a corridor, what they call biologists call it a wildlife corridor, that whose environment and ecosystem has been improved. So It feels hopeless, but all the things that you are saying contribute to making our part, our spot on this earth, healthier and contributes to a connection between other healthy yards, other healthy church yards, businesses, or whatever that helps to improve the ecosystem and the environment. Isn't that so?
I agree with that completely. In fact, I was just thinking that, one of the things that we do is that we want our yards to look the best yard in the neighborhood, right? And so
yes.
What we do is we go and to the big box stores and we get these lawn fertilizers, these chemicals, and we apply these chemicals, or we contact a lawn care company and we have them spray chemicals on our yard so that it can take away weeds and so forth, without the thought that what happens when it starts to rain, that those chemicals run off into our drain sewer, right? Our
storm yes. sewer.
And our storm sewers go to where? They go into water treatment plants,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And so we have a crisis, not just here in the Columbus-Franklin County area, but really throughout the country, where we are applying these chemicals to our lawn that are going into our water treatment, and it's actually increasing the cost when you have to remove all these pollutants and chemicals. It's actually increasing the cost of removing those things from our water supply, and that burden is passed back onto the consumer of water.
Yes, that's a good way to think about it.
Yeah, so we are poisoning our own system and then paying for it through the increased cost of removing the poison from our water system.
Alarming.
We have gotten this thing so screwed up, Dr. Pettigrew, that we really don't understand. We're not really connected to the environment in the way that we should be. So what should we do? Let's talk about what should we do. First, we've got to have an understanding that our environment is mirrored after the actions that we do. So if we treat our environment with respect and with a perspective of being healthy, then the environment flourishes and we benefit from that.
We do. Right? And on that note, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to continue that. And I also want to know where our listeners can find your article. We'll be right back, Faith and Family listeners.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. We go where you go. Download TalkTainmentRadio.com app to your cell or tablet. Podcasts are available. That's radio, the way it should be heard. Stay right there, and we'll be right back on TalkTainmentRadio.com.
We are strong, and we'll get through this together, but these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope, furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Presenting great moments in the history of 1-800-FED-INFO. For years, Americans have turned to 1-800-FED-INFO for government information. Make your own great moment. Call 1-800-FED-INFO. It's government made easy.
Loving this conversation. We could just talk forever. You were just bringing up important points. We're also learning that our listeners, they don't have to feel powerless. They can do something about to help improve the environment and their own ecosystem by doing the things that you've been talking about and what we've been talking about. But first, I want to ask you, this article that you wrote, what is the title of it, and where can our listeners find it?
Well, it was really not an article, but it was on Facebook. And I have a Facebook page where I post, and it's Tim the Gardener. And it's T-I-M-T-H-A Gardener, Tim the Gardener.
Okay.
And that's on Facebook, and a lot of my garden postings and instructions are on that page, Tim the Gardener.
I think it would be very instructive if our listeners, whether they're farmers or gardeners or what, to read your post and maybe become inspired to getting out in nature themselves removing stress and just living, you know, just enjoying life and enjoying what God has created, and also seeing how they can do their part through their church or through their own patio or their own porch or their own, as you say, small backyard, that they can do their part to improve the environment. Now, you were talking about three ways we can address some of this. Could you continue with that? We've talked about the energizer, the sun. We've talked about that 30% of our body is influenced by our environment, and so we need a healthy environment. So how about continuing that conversation?
I think that what we need to understand is that as humans, we are programmed to be cultivators, either in natural habitat or through fruits and vegetables. Our body has many, many, many thousands of years of programming that has sustained us, right? And then in the last 100+ years, we have moved away from an agricultural understanding to a manufacturing, now to an industrial IT component, and those are really in the scheme of things are very short in terms of our total experience as humans in terms of agriculture. But it's a disruptive force that what we see now in terms of IT and technology and manufacturing, it has definitely disrupted who we are.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I think that's important as we tap into this whole natural understanding is to spend time in nature.
Yes.
Spend time going out and exploring what nature is all about. You know, it's and develop that keen appreciation of what it means to have that relationship with what God provided to us, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So what happens is people come over here to my home, and I'm sure they come over to your home, and they appreciate what we've done, right?
Yes.
And they feel energized and recharged, right?
Yes.
And they wish that they could do it. Well, they can.
Yes. They can. And they don't need a large plot of land. I know we sort of touched on the issue of growing, you know, copious lawns, green lawns, which really are lovely, but don't nurture wildlife, don't nurture humans either, because we're not growing anything on them that helps our ecosystem except grass. They can come and they can learn that they can start amending their environment and growing and helping the environment and themselves just in a raised garden bed or a large pot, flower pot or container, and do a little research, read your post, and I'm going to tell them about my YouTube later, and they can learn to do that just with maybe five or six large containers with vegetables and some host and nectar plants, and they can begin to do that just in a very small space. They don't have to dig. They don't have to do any of that. They can begin simply and easily.
I agree with that. I think even taking a step even before then, going further upstream, Dr. Pettigrew, is to commune with nature.
Yes.
You know, go out. You know, go down to the Hocking Hills and spend a half a day. You know, go to Cuyahoga Forest and take a train ride and go go through the forest. Get in the our bodies need it.
They
right?
need it. And what they're calling this now, I mean, you know, you have to have a new name for old things, don't you? It's called forest bathing. And they're encouraging us to spend time in, and you don't need to go to a huge woods, just spend time in a small area of woods or forest or gardens. We have found so many natural parks in this area because we go for rides almost every day. But rediscovering mm-hmm. Blendon Woods, as you enter Blendon Woods, mm-hmm. there's a wonderful tree canopy that is over the road there, and you're just bathed in that peaceful. You go slowly, and in that peaceful feeling of being in an arboretum, you can sense that peace, you sense that beauty, and all of that. You can find so many places. Franklin Park isn't far from people. Like you said, Cuyahoga, Muskingum, Lake Hope, but even near, there's Heron Pond. There's all kinds of other places that you can just go, even in your own yard, if you, you know, just sit and meditate in quiet and just listen to the songs of the birds. Watch, maybe a hummingbird will show up. Just begin to, as my son used to say, see, not just look, but see, hear. You know, a very contemplative experience is what you're talking about. And you'll find that even the space that you are in becomes almost like a worship space. Because
I agree completely with that. I think that first we, in our spaces that we put in our home, both inside and outside, that it should be peaceful.
Yes.
And also it should be inspiring. And so whatever you find, because people always ask me when Patty and I started working in our backyard and so forth, people say, well, Tim, you got a lot going on in your backyard. You got a fire pit area, you got a deck, you got a garden. So, you know, how did you determine what to start on first? And I share this with folks, and I tell them that one of the things that you want to do is find an area in your backyard that you feel comfortable in, right?
Okay.
And then look at that area, and if you want to develop a fire pit, or if you want to put flowers, or if there's an area that you want to put a deck. And I said, organically, you will be, over time, you will grow an area, a living area, an outdoor living area. Our backyard is an outdoor living area.
Okay.
And so we have a wood swing, and then we have a fire pit area underneath a pergola, and then we have a deck that has a pergola, and then we have the garden. And so we can walk anywhere in our backyard. It's about mm-hmm. 1,800 square feet. Mm-hmm. We can walk anywhere in those 1,800 square feet, and it's an extension of our living area.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
So we have to understand that even in from the big picture, when we visit parks, when we're outdoors, it is an extension of our existence.
That's right.
Our existence is not tied to what's under the roof, right?
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And so we have to experience our existence in the fullness that it was supposed to be experienced in, right?
That's right.
I look at being outdoors, Dr. Pettigrew, as fulfilling the existence of my life.
That's right. I agree with that, because, and that is one of the things I'm on we meet via Zoom because of all the things that have gone on. So we meet via Zoom, but we are, our denomination has a conference creation care committee. And what we are trying to do is to encourage churches to become certified, to have community gardens, pollinator gardens, divest and force in fuel in in fuels and coal, and we're trying to get them to become more aware of the ways that we as a church community to make nature more friendly to church people, and to use those buildings, use those lawns, use our investments, use our preaching, our teaching, to help to bring about that a spirit of unity between God's nature and earth and all that's in it and the people in the building. Because for a long time, we had this preaching of dominating, the misunderstanding of dominion. Dominion didn't mean dominating all the earth's resources and then misusing them any way we wanted to, because they were for humans' well-being or whatever they wanted to do. That is a wrong interpretation. And so we're trying to get the faithful to begin to think about reframing that God has given us stewardship over all of the resources that God has put out there, and we are supposed to use them ethically, environmental justice. Well, we won't go on that, you know, when we deal with water and urban communities and poison of water. You touched on that. So you are really living that out and teaching that and a conduit of that, of helping people to reconnect to the earth through farming and sustainable living, to be able to come back to who we are, not people who worship power, but who understand that we're all in this together. And if we're not beginning to understand this now, with all the oceans heating up and icebergs melting and water being poisoned, if we're not beginning to understand that we need to be better stewards and to love and to join with Earth to so that we can all, you know, thrive, I don't know. But you're saying some very important things.
Well, you know, one of the things I think that's important for our understanding as stewards is that we're living in a time, Dr. Pettigrew, where the earth has changed. It's not changing. It has changed, right?
It has changed, yeah. And we've helped change it sometimes, not for the better.
Yeah, it's changed. And we have to adapt to that change, right?
Yeah.
If we don't adapt to that change, then we're going to be in peril, right? And so adapting to the change in the environment means that we understand what's occurring, and we protect the environment. We have to be protectors of the environment, because the environment is such. I mean, it's one of the things in the United States, and which is crazy to really think about, you know, that our winds come from the west, right? They come from the west and they go across the country. And those winds are called prevailing westerlies, right? Those winds are, they basically move climate from one end of the country to the other end. Right. And so and when those winds are disturbed through heat, primarily, then those winds will move in other directions. They'll move from the south to the north as opposed to moving across. And so as a result, when the winds move from the south to the north, because they tend to warm areas that aren't supposed to be warm, right?
Yeah.
And so then we have this whole environmental change where the northern climates get as hot as the southern areas.
That's
of the
what's
country.
Happening right now.
And that's changed, right?
That's dangerous.
When you and I
yes. Were yes.
Younger, we knew what four seasons were, right?
Yes.
Now four seasons are down to three seasons, and the winter season is a much milder where it used to be cold because the prevailing westerlies didn't push air from the south; it pushed it across the country. So we have to understand how our environment has changed and adapt to it, and we have to move away from this IT manufacturing-based mentality to a nature-first mentality. We have to have that mindset. So what you're doing through the churches and through other religious institutions is an important step in giving us the mindset of living outdoors, being outdoors, understanding our existence cannot be around being inside our home. It can't. That cannot be our perspective. We have to move our perspective beyond the four walls that we live in to the greater world. We have to look at our environment as where we live, not 1905. You understand?
Well, yes, that is true. And order, as natives would say, is fighting back a little bit because we have abused our earth and our resources. And so by excess of fossil fuels, which are hanging in the air, it's causing overwarming. So many the issues of drilling we're talking about, getting to the water sources. So, yes, it's changing, and we have to find ways to live into that. But there are some changes that will be so detrimental and damaging to all of us that, you know, you move towards extinction. That's one of the reasons you do we're into pollinator gardening, because our butterflies and our bees are diminishing, and they
right.
pollinate our food. And without pollinators, we won't have a food source. So we're looking at all the ways that we can embrace nature, understand nature, live with nature, and treat nature better. That's just saying it in a common way. Just do better by our natural resources. For instance, going around cutting down huge trees, which give so much to our environment. I'm forgetting the percentage now, and then you're cutting down mature trees. I think that isn't helpful for the environment. So yes, we're going to work with the changes, but in our own environments and collectively, in partnership with our communities, we're going to try to redress some of the things we have done in and to the environment that do really negatively impact people, especially communities of color, economic communities, whether they're of color or not. So all the things that you're saying are just so wonderful and so right on right now. We're running out of time, and I want you to give me your Facebook page again.
Okay.
Okay. What is that?
That is Tim the Gardener. The is spelled T-H-A, Gardener.
So the is T-H-A.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay,
and,
great.
And on that, there are, you know, postings and videos that can help people with understanding my approach to backyard gardening and small space gardening.
Are you available to, say, if someone wanted to have you as a speaker, are you available for speaking and that sort of thing?
I'm always available for speaking, and they can reach me. They can call me at 614-218-0598, 614-218-0598.
Well, that is wonderful, and I just want to thank you Tim.
I always have fun on your program. I enjoy our conversation so much.
Oh, great. It's just been wonderful. And our faith and family listeners, we have been with someone who really knows about how to help us live more abundant lives. And it has been, our guest today has been Tim Anderson, OSU College of Agriculture, certified Ohio Master Urban Farmer. Go on his Facebook page and listen to and look and read his post, because you'll learn so much. And you can call him also at 614-218-0598 if you want him to come and speak to your organization. Also, I'd like to ask you to go to Google, type in Butterflies and Bees, a Ministry of Pollinator Gardening on YouTube. You can look at my YouTube video on Butterflies and Bees, a Ministry of Pollinator Gardening. Well, my faith and family listeners, it's been so wonderful to be with you today, and especially with our wonderful guest, Tim Anderson, Master Urban Farmer. We thank you for listening, and we ask you to please now meditate on our closing hymn, For the Beauty of the Earth. Blessings galore.
For the beauty of the earth, for the glory of the skies, for the love which from our hymn of grateful praise.
So when does it start?
It starts in the ocean. And when I start my day, okay. Look slick, shower. After I shave, thank the Lord for all that God gave. Brush my teeth with the water always see me with Fiji bottles of water. In the summer, it's hotter. Take her swimming, you gotta make these opposites back up like lobsters. Indigenous warriors, we warrior up for water. Catch California slipping? Never. Let's say imposters, you already know. Cali mountaintops with snow. The Sierras in the Rockies. Snowboarding in the winter, surfing in the summer, feeling so cocky. I'm riding. We'll hit you with the super soaker. Life's got ups and downs like a roller coaster.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.